class this evening, we are going to answer the questions on sheet number 9, which covers the Sermon on the Mount. Are there any who would like this sheet? Bill has the stack right here, so just raise your hand nice and high, and we will get a copy to you. Now, I have no idea where we left off as far as questions go, so please help. Does anyone know where we left off in terms of answering questions? I'm sorry?
Brother Ben.
Brother Ben. So, you were the last question from the last time. And so, we start. Ready? Okay, so number one. Okay, and so theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So what, and poor in spirit would mean, has to do with your heart and the disposition of your heart. I'm spent. I have nothing to offer. And we come to the throne and we come to God with poor in spirit. I have nothing to give here. And so I think that's the idea. Number two. Yes.
What promise is it standing to those that mourn, they shall be comforted?
And number three. Not weak. That's right. That's right. Number four.
What is the attitude for righteousness?
Yes. They shall be filled, and our attitude toward it is we ought to be hungering and thirsting for it, right? And that might have been what you said, Joe. I missed it. Okay, and number five. So obtain mercy. And number six. That's right. It reminds me of "Be holy, for I am holy." We can't even approach Him and be with Him unless we have that pure heart. Number seven. As much as is at all possible, correct? Be at peace. Okay, number eight, coming down to the front, Julie.
What if Christians who have been persecuted rejoice in being seated with God?
Yes. And number nine?
What happens if the salt loses its flavor? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men.
And number 10.
What did Jesus come to do in regard to the law and the prophets? Help the soul of them to
fulfill. Okay, number 11.
Is it enough to refrain from adding adultery?
Number 12. And number 13.
What does it mean? What does Jesus warn about in Matthew 6:1? And that's really being seen of men in our righteousness, being seen by men, for that is our reward and not our Father.
And number 14.
How did the hypocrites pray? Pray in vain to be seen with you.
And 15? Just reading it right. So, well, how did it open and close? You remember we made some comments about that, just to throw a couple of pieces out there for you. With the glorifying the Father, right? I mean, there was kind of an open and closing, and it is difficult to summarize that one quickly. Okay. Good job. So, we hit an outline on that, didn't we, Leon? And I'm failing to remember the points. There was just a couple of those. Can you help us with that?
Well, sure. It was just, you might say, bullet points, pray on behalf of the kingdom, pray on behalf of the will of God, pray for our own salvation, pray for the bread, which would mean our sustenance. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was looking for. That's right. Thank you. Okay, and number 16.
How did Jesus say, if you stop the good, you take the good, and then they back? You remove their head, wash your face, you do not appear to be men in fasting. Do this here.
Just right the opposite of the way things are being done. And number 17. Up here to the front, Bill. 17.
What should Christians put first? God's kingdom and righteousness.
Yes. And number 18.
What kind of judging?
And number 19?
What encouragement is given in verses 7 through 11? God will give good gifts to those who ask.
Number 20?
Describe the two gates in two ways where they lead. There's the wide gate that leads to destruction, and the narrow gate to eternal life.
And 21? Yeah, and the ones who would hear these sayings and do them, and the ones who did not. Okay, very good. So that was questions on the Sermon on the Mount. And don't let me forget that there are questions for the next section. It will be this sheet up here. So that I'm going to hand out before the end of class. So when I get my two-minute warning, I'll try to let that be my reminder about this sheet here. Okay, so having wrapped up the Sermon on the Mount, we get into a couple of stories we're going to cover that are covered in the book of Matthew and in the book of Luke, and they're not recorded in Mark. Remember how Mark is kind of the shorter of the Gospels, and things are very brief and concise, and you have more expanded information and more stories in Matthew and Luke's account of those synoptic Gospels. And so we're going to cover a couple of those to begin with, and this is going to be in Matthew chapter 8. And Luke chapter 7. And let's go to Luke chapter 7 because of the way it's going to lead into some other things beyond that. Okay, and so again, we have hit on this before, but in this Galilean ministry, which is where we are in the life of Christ, we're in the Galilean ministry, a fair piece of his ministry I'm estimating about 18 months or so in that. And it's not always easy to put things just in perfect order. We've discussed how that is. But that is okay. It shouldn't throw us off. It's thrown me off before, and I want to be able to do that. I like that. But we do want to cover things that happened and understand that even if we don't know the exact chronology, that there are lessons we gain out of it, and that we generally will see some themes progressing and developing as we go through this period. So, what is it again at the Sermon on the Mount that is said at the end of that time? And when he spoke, what was the reaction? What was the response of the people? Correct. So, spoke as someone that had authority, not as the scribes and the... and
they were astonished.
Yeah, astonished by this. And so, you know, when he's saying, you know, you've heard that it was said, but I say to you, and I want you to do this. And that's not just, you know, appealing to, you know, previous authority. He's laying down by his own authority, and that was something that would have been very astonishing and very different. I'm going to get to that later, maybe. So that's one thing, is that they were astonished by the authority that he spoke. And then here we have a couple of stories. We're going to talk about the centurion's servant that's healed, and we're going to talk about the widow's son raised from the dead. And so what is it, you know, here Jesus performs miracles, and what do they do? What was the purpose of miracles again? To confirm the word, right? To prove his authority, right? And so here, this is a good point to look at these events and recognize, you know, as he's coming off of the Sermon on the Mount, again, demonstration of his authority. So, Luke chapter 7, and I'd like for us to read the text together, beginning at verse 1. Now, when he concluded all his sayings in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. And a certain centurion's servant, who was dear to him, was sick and ready to die. So when he heard about Jesus, he sent elders of the Jews to him, pleading with him to come and heal his servant. And when they came to Jesus, they begged him earnestly, saying that the one for whom he should do this was deserving. For he loves our nation and has built us a synagogue. And then Jesus went with them. And when he was already not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying to him, Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I am not worthy that you should enter under my roof. Therefore, I did not even think myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man placed under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes. And to another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does it. And when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him and turned around and said to the crowd that followed him, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel. And those who were sent returned to the house, and they found the servant well, who had been sick. And so, picture this. Okay, you see the events here as he comes into Capernaum. And he's entering into the city. What's following him? A multitude of people, a crowd of people. Regular stuff for him, right? I mean, this was happening all the time. So here comes a crowd following him. Probably pretty easy to find him. So he's coming into the city. He's got the crowd following him. And then these leaders of the Jews approach him, having been sent by the centurion. And they're saying, hey, this guy's servant is sick. And he's asking you to heal him. And he's really deserving of this. This is a good man. This is somebody that has helped us. He's built a synagogue. And we think he's very well deserving of this. And so Jesus agrees to go, right? And so he's heading toward his house, and here comes the crowd of people following behind. And then out come the friends of the centurion. Oh, you know, don't even come in. I'm not worthy. What kind of a humble spirit that is, that he doesn't even want Jesus into his house. I'm not even worthy of that. But I'm asking you, do this. I know you can. At your word, heal my servant. And when he sees that faith, he stops and turns around to the crowd. I mean, you can see it. It's just all developing before you. And speaks to the crowd. On this occasion, as he sees this faith, he wants to make some points to the people that are following. Okay, so what did the centurion believe that the Lord could do? What did he believe? He knew it could be done. Right. Even though he wasn't present. Okay? And so he says, you know, I'm not worthy that you should come into my house. And what was it that Jesus, when he turned around to the crowd, what did he reply? What did he say again? Right. Okay. Now, what would that have implied to the Jews when he says he hasn't found so great a faith in all of Israel? Yeah. They didn't get it. They didn't recognize the authority that Jesus had, like this centurion recognized his authority. And we're coming off the Sermon on the Mount, and this whole idea of being astonished at his authority that he spoke, and yet here are the Jews declining that. Now, when Jesus said, if we go to Matthew's account, we have some more detail given. In chapter 11, I did that wrong. Chapter 8, I'm sorry. So Matthew chapter 8. When he said he had not found such great faith even in Israel, in verse 10 and verse 11, he says that many will come from the east and the west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the sons of the kingdom will be cast into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And so when he said that there would be many that shall come from the east and the west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, what was he predicting? What was Jesus anticipating? Yeah, the Gentiles. This is really one of the promises to Abraham, right? Anticipating that promise that in his seed all the nations of the earth would be blessed. And so, but also that he would be rejected by his own people too. Right? So he sees this coming and gives a hint at what is to come here. Okay. So, we saw, I think, Sue, you'd mentioned, you know, the power that Jesus had, not only to heal, but also the power to do this over distance, right? So, and I think we see some of those same kinds of lessons in the Gospel of John, you know, that the ability to heal over the power over distance and the power over time. And this is another one of those examples. Okay, so now, back to Luke chapter 7. Not to bounce you around, but there was that little detail we should touch on. Luke chapter 7, and beginning at verse 11, picking up where we left off. Now, it happened the day after, okay? So remember, we're keeping the picture of the events, and the day after that he went into a city called Nain, okay? Now, Nain is not right close to Capernaum, is it? I mean, it's a little bit of a southeast of Nazareth, correct?
It's east.
But not right close to Capernaum. I mean, it's a little bit of a walk. So the next day, he's in Nain. Verse 11. He went to a city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him, and a large crowd. And when he came near the gate of the city, behold, a dead man was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the city was with her. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, "Do not weep." And then he came and touched the open coffin, and those who carried him stood still. And he said, "Young man, I say to you, arise." So he who was dead sat up and began to speak. And he presented him to his mother. And then fear came upon all, and they glorified God, saying, "A great prophet has risen up among us, and God has visited his people." And this report went about him, went throughout all Judea and all the surrounding region. Okay, so this is no small thing. Is this, am I correct? Is this the first time in New Testament that we have someone raised from the dead? Am I correct with that? I think I'm right. And so, pretty remarkable. No one's seen this yet. Now, they've seen people healed. They've seen lame people rise up and walk. But have they seen a dead person be raised and alive again? No, this caused a big stir. And I think it's interesting when he sees this, why does he have compassion on her? What's the situation? She's a widow, right? And it's her only son, so that means she's left alone. And there's the compassion. And that's a neat thing to see. So she has no one, wouldn't have anybody to provide for her. And in his compassion, and he comes to her, and he just says something that, I mean, this is the strangest thing to say. "Do not weep." And here, I mean, he's anticipating what he's going to do. But wouldn't that have caught people's ears when he comes up to him? He's got a whole crowd of people following her. And here's her only son, and she's mourning the loss of her son. And someone comes up and says, "Don't cry." And are you kidding? This is the time to cry. This is the time to weep. And he says this, but he knows what he's about to do. And I think that's it just struck me when I read that tonight. So, okay. So the response is, "A great prophet has risen up among us. God has visited his people. Okay. Now, any comments about that before we continue on? Okay. We move on. Verse 18. After this event happens, then the disciples of John reported to him concerning these things. So where is John right now? Yes, John's in prison, okay? And he's not right nearby in prison. He's down south on the east side of the Dead Sea, okay, in prison. And we remember the occasion why he was in prison, right? Had to do with who? Yes, that's right. So John had rebuked Herod for having his brother's wife, and so he gets thrown into prison. And he's been there for about 6 months. And word gets back to him. John's disciples let him know about what had just happened, how this child had been raised from the dead. And John, calling two of his disciples to him, sent them to Jesus, saying, "Are you the coming one? Or do we look for another?" And when the men had come to him, they said, "John the Baptist has sent us to you, saying, 'Are you the coming one, or do we look for another?'" And that very hour he cured many of infirmities, afflictions, and evil spirits, and to many blind he gave sight. And Jesus answered and said to them, "Go and tell John the things you have seen and heard, that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he who is not offended because of me." And so they come asking, and it says at that very hour Jesus healed many people around him. It's almost as if he doesn't answer their question, but he shows them many amazing things right in front of them, and then says, "Now go tell John. Tell him what you saw." And when the messengers of John had departed, he began to speak to the multitudes concerning John. And what does he ask him? He said, "What did you go out to see?" When you went out to see John, so now Jesus is going to talk about John's ministry. And when you went out to see him, what did you go out to see? Did you go out to see a reed shaken by the wind? But what did you go out to see? Did you go out to see a man clothed in soft garments? Indeed, those who are gorgeously appareled and live in luxury are in king's courts. But where was John? Was he in king's courts? Where was he? He was in the wilderness. Okay? So you didn't go out to look for that. You didn't go out to see some weak reed that could just be shaken by the wind. What did you go out to see? Did you go out to see a prophet? Yes, I say to you, and more than a prophet. This is he of whom it is written, 'Behold, I send my messenger before your face, who will prepare your way before you.'" And where is he quoting from? Malachi. That's right. So the prophet Malachi, who had foretold about John coming, and but of course calling him by what name? Elijah. Okay? Yeah, "Behold, I send Elijah the prophet to you." And in Matthew's account of this, Jesus specifically says, if you can bear this, this is Elijah. And absolutely declares, this is the one. Okay? Now, we're at at 1 minute. Okay? So I have to stop. And I have questions right here. So we'll pick up from there, and I think there's some really good material here about Jesus and his description of John. Yes. I'll let you divide that up if you will. So up here at the top, you'll notice it says Life of Christ, question sheet number 9. That's supposed to be 10, okay? So don't be confused by that. We have two sheet number 9s, but this is number 10. Okay, so